Okay, so tonight I wanted to talk about a really challenging topic, which we're not going to have an answer to because nobody has, as far as I know, nobody has the answer. But I think it's important to lay out the issues of this topic. And what I want to suggest is that maybe we can think about the same question from a different vantage point and use that to help us navigate sometimes what could be and what is a challenging situation sometimes. So this question could come up in something positive, and it could also be something not necessarily so positive. So let's say, for example, let's say you happen to be on vacation and your in-laws happen to live in a place that was a block and a half from a Krispy Kreme store. You happen to be down there in this fictional place. And now, this did not happen to me, but I'm imagining like what the gewaltige Sache could happen to you in such a circumstance. You pull up to Krispy Kreme, and when you get to the drive-thru, they open the window and they say, "You are the 100,000th customer at our Krispy Kreme. And because of that, we baked you this unbelievable," and you know, the fresh, hot, right off the, if you haven't had this, it's super kedai. When you go and the hot sign is on, and they say, it's your lucky day. And they hand you this enormous, fresh, once-in-a-lifetime donut. And you're like, ah, Baruch Hashem, amazing. What siyata deshmaya, what hashkacha pratis that I happen to be there just this one day and on that one car. So here you are, you have this amazing, delicious Krispy Kreme donut. And you're thinking to yourself, when I say Baruch Hashem, what do I mean by that? Do I mean that the Ribono Shel Olam designed through divine providence that I should be the lucky recipient of this Krispy Kreme donut? And how do we view that question? And I pose it in a humorous, you know, positive situation. Because all too often, unfortunately, the way that we look at that question is not oftentimes in the, you know, I won the Krispy Kreme donut, but as Rahman al-Itzlan, sometimes you talk to someone and they're going through a very difficult time and they start to wonder, why did this happen to me? There was a fellow who lives in our neighborhood, some of you knew him, who was a middle-aged fellow, extremely wonderful person, and he became ill with a very serious ailment. And because we were friendly, I used to go visit with him. And when I started visiting him, he would ask, why did the Ribono Shel Olam choose me for this? And I certainly didn't have any good answers. But it kind of begs the question, and the reason why I bring it up today is because there is a Ramban. The Ramban in the end of last week's Parsha, in the end of Parsha's Bo, this is, you know, if you were to ask a yeshiva student to survey most important and most well-known Rambans, this would probably be up there. The Ramban says, look, you know, it's really important to make a zechira for Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is why, he says, well, I'm going to have every other mitzvah, kemaat bizechal Yetzias Mitzrayim, all over the place. You know, your tefillin, or your kiddush, your everything is going to be zechal Yetzias Mitzrayim, because obviously, it's not going to be in every generation that the Ribono Shel Olam is going to pull out his bag of tricks from his hat and show you, I created the world, I can change the world, I'm in control of the world. There's the concept of divine providence. It's not going to happen every generation. So we'll do it once. And then every year, one night of the year, we're going to make an awesome experiential learning program. You know, it was before child-centered experiential education was in vogue, and they call it the Seder. Right, that was the point of it. And we're going to make tons of other mitzvahs because we're going to remember that the Ribono Shel Olam created the world. And that's why we have so many mitzvahs. And in that context, the Ramban says, well, we need to know about Yetzias Mitzrayim because of one very important teaching. What is that? Something that he says is a fundamental principle in Yahadus. Umin hanisim hagedolim hamufursamim, from the mega miracles, adam mode benisim hanistarim shehim yesod haTorah kula. We believe in the hidden miracles, the small miracles. And then the Ramban goes to say something even more extraordinary, where he says, "Sheim Adam Chelik b'Torahs Moshe Rabbeinu Ad Shenamin b'Chol Dvareinu u'Mikreinu Shekulam Nisim Ein Behem Teva Menagos Shel Olam Bein B'Rabim Bein B'Yachid." Rather, if a person does mitzvahs, he'll be matzliach, and if not, not. Which is a really powerful statement. Now, does that mean that when I walk out of my house in the morning, and my yarmulke blows down the street? There's an interesting editorial in a tradition once where Rabbi Shalom Karmi pointed this out. Like, do I think that yarmulke blowing down the street, and now I'm like, you've seen the guy, flailing in the shul parking lot to pick up his yarmulke. Is that an onus from Hashemayim? Is that divine providence that I'm being put through this ordeal of trying to catch my yarmulke as it blows down the parking lot? According to the Ramban, maybe. And this is a very strong sentiment, especially, the Ramban isn't talking here specifically, isn't used the words hashgacha pratis, but this is what we call the concept of hashgacha pratis, and it appears at length in many other places. And there are sources in Chazal. There's a beautiful medrash where the medrash says in Bereshis that every blade of grass, I know some of you are familiar with this, I think Yonatan Razel or Aaron Razel, somebody has a good song about this, that every asif, every blade of grass doesn't grow unless there's a malach that says it's time to grow. So this idea that every mikra, every instance in our lives is governed by a close connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of divine providence. So this is something which has become very, very popular, especially in the tradition of Hasidus. This appears in the Sefer HaTanya and others, of viewing our lives as expressions of Hashgacha Pratis. And if that's the case, then of course, we're going to be thinking about what is the specific cause, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but that's the first way to look at it. Perhaps, according to the Ramban, my Krispy Kreme donut that's my Hashgacha Pratis. I don't know why it was my Hashgacha Pratis. Maybe it's going to be a deduction from my Olam Haba. Maybe it's just because, I don't know, whatever. There's a specific reason that I got the Krispy Kreme donut. That's one approach. But if you look at the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, in the Chela Gimel in the 18th section, where the Rambam says, look, he says, you're right, great tzaddikim, the super righteous, the high level Nevi'im, they have Hashgacha Pratis. But the regular kind of run of the mill people, so then they don't necessarily have Hashgacha Pratis. They have Hashgacha Kalolis. Whether you get Hashgacha Pratis depends on your level. And it's not that every single thing that happens to every single person is a product of Hashgacha Pratis. So I still remember when I got married, we were very fortunate that the night of our wedding, we were in Miami and not in New York, because there was an enormous blackout. You remember that?
Can't forget the anniversary.
Can't forget that.
August 14th?
That's right.
2003.
August 14th, 2003. Three. That's right. So because of that blackout, Rav Schechter, Shalita, my Rebbe, was our Vestad of Kedushin, was stuck with us in Miami for Shabbos, which was awesome. Also, it was great. So I still remember he spoke at Shalosh Shudas in the shul about Hashgacha Pratis, about Zivugim, about Shiduchim. And he quoted the Rambam, who said, well, whether or not somebody's zivug is preordained from heaven will depend. If they're an unusual tzaddik, then they'll have that special hashgacha pratis for their zivug. If they're an unusual rasha, they'll also be identified in a specific way. And if they're somewhere in the middle, we don't know, maybe it's hashgacha pratis or not. And he said about me, he said, he's definitely not an unusual rasha. I said, that's great. But according to the Rambam, in the middle ground, not the average person, perhaps you could say, is going to be subject to Hashgacha Kalolis. So how do I deal with that then? How do I navigate this machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, between these two different schools? What does that mean? What does it mean for my life? And it's a very difficult question. So you will find people who are devotees of either school. But I wonder if maybe there's a different way to look at this question, which doesn't resolve the question, but maybe frames it differently and can be useful in terms of our Avodas Hashem. You know, Chazal have an expression that when a person has Rachman al-Assad, Yisurin, a person, God forbid, Lo Aleinu, has a difficult time, Yifash Feish B'masav. He should introspect, should scrub clean, should look carefully, you know, audit his actions. So if you're the Ramban, you might say that the reason you need to do Yifash Feish B'masav is because this specific thing is the product of your personal shortcoming in a particular area, so you need to inquire where it's coming from. According to the Rambam, what does that mean? You know, if maybe according to the Rambam, this might not even be Hashgacha Pratis at all. It just happens to be. I walked outside and the wind was blowing. So the wind was blowing. It blew off my yarmulke. I had to run in the street looking like a fool and had to, you know, come late to my meeting because, you know, the whole thing. That's the way it is. And yet the Rambam Hilchos Tanis says that if a person has suffering that is visited upon them, Rachman Litzlah, Hashem Yisbarach should spare all of us and all of Klal Yisrael. The Rambam says if a person doesn't take spiritual stock, so then that's achzarius. The word achzar is being used very interestingly by the Rambam here. Because what does the word achzar mean in modern Hebrew? Right, it means cruel. Why does it mean cruel? Because the word achzar actually means callous. So cruelty comes from not feeling, not being sensitive to someone else. So the Rambam says that's called achzarius because you're not being sensitive to a spiritual opportunity. But what spiritual opportunity? I don't know if this is hashgacha pratis or not. I don't see hashgacha pratis here necessarily. So how do you navigate between these two poles? So maybe
you say, like, if you were a tzaddik, you would get hashgacha pratis.
Yes. So you get a... So there is a story, I think it appears, I don't think it's apocryphal, I think it's a real story, that Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think he had a medical procedure at the end of his life, and I forget exactly, I have to look back, I think it's in the Rav Moshe biography at home. Something, Rav Moshe Feinstein.
He had a pacemaker.
That's what it was. I forget, he had some.
Maybe a halal and he couldn't be on Sanhedrin or something.
Mm-mm. The question was, he needed to have certain medical intervention, and the question was whether he should reach for a particular doctor who was out of town or a local doctor. And in the context of that story, he told his wife or he told his family members that he's having this particular ailment because he can identify such and such an avera that he did, and he assumes that it's because of that avera that he has this medical predicament. So if you're a tzaddik, like Rav Moshe, so you could probably, you know, if I had to look up the number of averas that I did, I shouldn't speak badly, Lashon Hara, you shouldn't say about yourself. If I had to, you know, God forbid, make a tally of all my averas in one day, you know, I'd probably run out of reasons. Rav Moshe, you know, he could think back, he could say, you know, 17 years ago, I said Lashon Hara, God forbid, or something like that. So yes, if you're on that level of Cheshbon HaNefesh, you can identify, so then maybe. But what about for the rest of us? What about those of us who are just aspiring?
Could it be like a good, you know, like good or something?
Oh, so now you're mechaven to what I wanted to kind of go down that road. So a couple of years ago, exactly that point, a couple of years ago, the Kollel brought Rav Schechter to Chicago for a weekend of learning. And even though, as many of you know, Rav Schechter is not a Hasidish Rebbe, but we felt that it was a great opportunity, so we brought him to different schools. So he came to Ari Crown, and then he went to Hillel Torah. It was amazing. So in Hillel Torah, we had all the kids in the gym, and he had the Q&A. And one kid raised their hand. I still remember this. Amazing. Kid raised his hand, and he asked Rav Schechter if we believe in Gilgulim. That was his question. Now, Rav Schechter is not a Hasidic personality, so much so that on that same Shabbat Sheva Brachos, I still remember at lunch, my mother-in-law, God bless her, she, as you would say in Chicago, she's embarrassing. She asked Rav Schechter, is it a segula to eat the challah? So he, without missing a beat, he said, yeah, it's a segula to get fat. So you know what he said to the seventh grade, I forget whether the kid was seventh grade or eighth grade kid in Hillel Torah, when the kid raised her hand? He said, do we believe in Gilgulim? It doesn't matter.
That's such a rough.
But it was such a powerful answer. He said to the kid, he said, look, Whether or not we believe in Gilgulim doesn't change how you're supposed to lead your life. Whether or not this is your future because you had some, why does that matter? You know, when you get up in the morning, you have to say Moda Ani. You have to develop your connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether you're a Gilgul or not. So that kind of brings us down the road of maybe thinking about this question in a different way. Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, has a very important fundamental essay called Kol Dovi Do Fake. The second half of the essay is the more well-known part of the essay, where he talks about the state of Israel and what he calls the six knocks. The Rabbi Yosef knocking on our door in six ways with the advent of the state of Israel. But the first part of the essay of Kol Dovi Do Fake is about the Holocaust. And he talks about Eov and suffering. And in the context of the discussion about the Holocaust, which of course Rav Soloveitchik, you know, was on the American scene when that happened in Europe, he distinguishes not in these words, but in these concepts, between two different kinds of questions. The questions of why and the questions of what. We can ask why. Rav Soloveitchik on Tisha B'Av emphasized this, that especially on Tisha B'Av, we can ask why. Why did this happen to us? You know, sometimes we have answers for that question on Tisha B'Av. We'd say, Tzadik Hashem Kipiyo Marisi, you know. We can ask why. But the challenge is that unless you have a Navi, who's going to give you the answer of why specifically something happened? It's not shocking to me that if you look at Chazal, and you know who did a ton of research and shared a lot in the Kola with us, Rabbi Ehrenfeld, one of his areas of expertise is Tzadik Viralo. He spoke about that a few times. So he shared with us tons of Makoros. It's not surprising to me that when it came to Tzadik Viralo, Moshe Rabbeinu asked, and you know what the Rabbi Shalom told him? I say, I can't tell you the answer to that. You know why you assume happening? So the Gemara has like five or six different options. Because there is no one answer. Who's going to know unless you're a Navi? And even Moshe Rabbeinu, the Adon HaNavim, when he said to Ribono Shel Olam, let me see your face. I'd like to understand the cheshbonos of this world. The Ribono Shel Olam says, Ufanai lo yeirau. You only see V'ra'isas achorai. After 120, a person can see the whole tapestry and how all the little threads fit together. So you can ask why on Tisha B'Av. But how far will that get you? Right? It won't get you very far.
Unless the answer is something that you did and that you could correct.
Right. But my question, and this is why I go back to the Ramban and the Rambam, is how do I know? How do I know whether the Ramban is right and it's Hashgacha Pratis, or how do I know if the Rambam is right? So perhaps, maybe the way to look at this machlokas, in a certain sense, and you could say this is a philosophical cop-out because I'm not a philosopher, which is fine, you know, and this could not work for you, but maybe the answer is, it doesn't matter. That's the wrong question to ask. The question is not whether this is Hashgacha Pratis or Hashgacha Klalis. The question is not, why did this happen to me? The question is, what am I supposed to do about it now? It's not a question of why, it's a question of what. And this is what Rav Soloveitchik develops in Kol Dovi Do Fake. That Yisurin suffering, that poses a challenge for us. And the same thing, by the way, it's a Nisayon of Oni, it's also a Nisayon of Osher, when we're blessed. You know, how do we react to the circumstance that we've been given? How do we refine ourselves? The Gemara's challenge of Yifash Feish B'masav, I wonder if the Rambam would read that Gemara and say, it doesn't mean you should introspect because you're going to find the root cause of your suffering. What it means is you should use this as an opportunity for self-improvement. What am I going to do about it now? You know, what does this Yisur in Rahman al-Islam, what does it present for my life? And what does it call upon me to do? How am I going to refine myself if I'm in this predicament, if I'm in this situation? And it's interesting to think about that even psychologically. This particular person from our neighborhood who passed away not too long after he was diagnosed with this illness, after I talked with him over the course of a period of time, you know, I was just listening, just listening, but he started to shift from the question of why to the question of what. He stopped asking, why did the Ribbono Shel Olam do this to me? Why did he choose me? And he started asking, what am I going to do with this? You know, maybe I should speak about it. Maybe I should, you know, different things. You know, what am I going to do with this now? He totally shifted. And this is something that Dr. Pelkovitz would talk to us about in terms of stages of bereavement and coping with trauma. You know, that's his major expertise, is dealing with trauma. So he talks about going from passive to active. And in a certain sense, that's really the difference between the why question, the question of fate, versus the way Rav Soloveitchik would say the difference between fate and destiny in a different context. The active, what am I going to do about this now? You know, what are the things that I can do to improve my relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to enhance my own Avodas Hashem in the circumstance that I'm found, that, you know, that is facing me now? Not some that I would have chosen. But based on this Mahalach, I think it's a passive to active move. Because when you're asking why, you're really saying, I'm not a player here. I am the object of this circumstance, and I want to know why that happened to me. That would be the Hebrew word for why is madua. I want an explanation. Tell me, you out there, tell me. But David HaMelech, when he says to the Ribbono Shel Olam about something that did happen difficult to him, he said to him in a different question. He said to him, Keli, Keli, and Tehillim, Keli, Keli, Lama Azavtani. What's the difference between the word madua and lama?
For
what purpose? That's it. It's a contraction. I once heard this from Dr. Lamb in the name of Dr. Belkin, Zichrono Lefracha. The word lama is why, but not give me an explanation. I want to understand your rationale. It's lama. For what purpose? What am I supposed to do with this now? You left me alone. Kaili, kaili, lama azavtani. For what? What do you want me to do now that I'm in this predicament? And maybe with that frame, you could say, and this is what Rav Soloveitchik says, I can look at this as an opportunity for feedback, as an opportunity to take stock in my life, and an opportunity, you know, different ways of looking at it. Because the why question, we may not have answers, but the Yafash Veish V'Masav, there are always opportunities to grow closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even if it means talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam about it, you know, the Pia Setzner in the Drushas in the Warsaw Ghetto, in the Eish Kodesh, he's talking about how difficult it is. He's talking about, you know, the suffering and the difficulties and the tragedy of it. But he doesn't say, why is this the case? He's looking at, what are we going to do now? You know, what does it mean for us right now? In one of his pieces, there's something so powerful. So powerful. You know, the Pasuk describes how when Yoshiyahu found the Sefer Torah, he sent a message to Huldah, the Nevi'ah. So the Gemara says in Megillah, that's very odd. Yirmiyahu was alive at that time. Why would he call Huldah, no disrespect to Huldah, but Yirmiyahu, why would Yoshiyahu call Huldah? He should have texted Yirmiyahu. So the Gemara says, you know why? Because Nashim are Rachmanios. They have an ingrained sense of compassion, and things are really bad. He needed to tap into the compassion of Huldah. So you know what the Rebbe says? He writes in one of the drushas, he says, ah, you know what that teaches us? That teaches us that when we see the situation now is so difficult, we need to call upon the schus of the Nashim Tzidkanios. We need to cultivate our sense of Rachmanos. He says, what happens in the ghetto? And if you look in the writings, it's never horrible. The writings of Rav Shimon Huberband, who was kind of like a colleague of the Pia Setzner Rebbe in the ghetto, and he may have been the one who was responsible for saving the Pia Setzner's writings as part of the Onig Shabbos archives underground. So he says, unfortunately, there are people who are callous. He describes a scene where there's a couple who's going to buy candy in the candy store when wearing fur, when there's a couple of starving children, emaciated children sitting on the floor, and they didn't pass anything to them. So the Rebbe says, what do we do in these circumstances? He doesn't say, why did the Ribbono Shel Olam do this to us? I don't know why, but he says, you know what happens in a case like this? We are called upon to become noble, not to become callous to suffering, which is the obvious consequence of seeing such unimaginable suffering. He says, just like in the case of Huldah, where Yoshiyahu really needed to tap into to some Rachmanas. So he reached out to Chulda. So we're going to tap into the Koach of the Nashim Tzidkaniyas, the Koach of Rachmanas, and we're going to cultivate the sense of Rachmanas in ourselves. So I find that this is a very powerful framework. That we have a machlokas, it's a machlokas gedolei harishonim, and it's going to be a machlokas contemporary approaches. You look in different articles in different places, you'll find different perspectives on the place of hashkacha pratis. But I wonder if another way of looking at the question is not so much the question of why is this happening? Is it hashkacha pratis? And if, you know, the presumption is if it's hashkacha pratis, I should know why it is. The answer is not why is it happening. The better question, or an alternative question that might be more productive, is what do I do about this now? You know, I can tell you for myself, maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam, when he endowed me with wonderful gifts that I could never repay him for, obviously, patience maybe wasn't so much one of the top, you know, the deepest reservoirs that I got. So maybe what the Ribbono Shel Olam expects from me when my yarmulke falls off in the street and blows down the street is that I should learn some patience. Maybe that's what he's giving me. He's giving me an opportunity to strengthen my resolve in Tikkun HaMidos. Maybe he puts me in a situation that, you know, one of my kids is just driving me absolutely insane. So maybe that difficulty, maybe that trial is for me to grow in my own development so that I'm not so self-absorbed and I can think about it from somebody else's perspective. Maybe that's my Nisayon. But the concept of the Nisayon is not asking why, but it's raising up. That's why, and we'll conclude with this, the word Nisayon comes from the word Nes. The son Nes, Lakabetz Galiyosenu, raise up the banner. When the Rebbe Shalom gives us this Nisayon, whether it's Hashkacha Pratis or Hashkacha Klolis, we take as an opportunity to raise up a banner to say, we can live up to this challenge. We can use this as an opportunity for growth. And it may be excruciatingly difficult, Rachmana Litzlan. But the question is, what am I going to do about it now? And in that way, in a certain sense, we can grow, in a certain sense, we can grow closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if it's a difficult thing. Whether it's a positive thing, which sometimes we have the Nisayon of Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat, that things go so well we forget that it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So on that side, even if it's not Hashkacha Pratis, but if I won that donut, what does the Rebbe Shalom expect from me right now? That better be one awesome Bori Minei Mizonos. Right? I have an opportunity to bring godliness into the world through this incredible baked delight. So if I forget the Rebbe Shalom, you know, I didn't answer the question what correctly. So it's not just for the negative side, it's also for the positive side. We need to think about what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects from us in these circumstances, whether or not it's Hashkacha Pratis or not. It's a different way of looking at this very important question as we go through our lives. So I thought.